806 FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings. Ash Wednesday, Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig. Plus, we'll check in with our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams, who's put together at least 4 or 5 days of dry to get... We need it. We need it big time here. We'll talk more with Doc coming up at around 8:35. Right now, y'all say hello to our buddy Jeff Poor. Read his work in Lanyap, Yellowhammer News, Breitbart, and, of course, host of The Jeff Poor Show on WVNN in Huntsville. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. Lots to talk about here. First of all, we'll circle back around to this because we're just a week out from the primaries, less than a week out from Super Tuesday here in Alabama. But on the national stage, I guess the story was another Democratic debate and another, good night for Bernie Sanders or bad night? What do you think?
The early reaction is it was kind of, everything's kind of baked in right now. I would say probably a good night for Joe Biden, if anybody. But the problem is, I think a lot of people watching it, given that it was on CBS and not on cable news, a lot more people were watching it. They might not be watching or have watched this saga unfold on the Democrat side. So my thinking is that, it probably wasn't their best showing if you're trying to take a wholesale approach to, hey, this is why you need to vote Democrat.
Okay. Yeah, because we heard the audio. We might play a clip of that in a second. The cacophony of people talking over each other and all that. I don't know if that, if you come to it and you hear that, does that mean that you're not going to vote for this candidate or that candidate? I think it just makes it harder to get the real debate going. But like you said, it's baked in. Are people going to come away from that and say, well, I'm definitely not going to vote for so-and-so?
Let's pretend that you haven't made your mind up.
Okay.
Let's assume that you're just kind of open and you're trying to keep an open mind. What do you take away from that? You can't really get a coherent, consistent message from that, because it's not a good time. It's always like this at this stage of a presidential primary, because they were probably saying the same thing about Republicans, with Donald Trump up there hurling insults, and then Marco Rubio trying to match him insult for insult, Ted Cruz up there. All that going on. The Republicans had the same problem, but just, for this little snapshot in time, to me, It was a time when Democrats have a national television all across the board time, and they just weren't able to capitalize on it. Now, like I said, maybe that's just the nature of presidential elections, but I wouldn't say that it was a net positive at all.
It seemed like Joe Biden changed his strategy up last night, in the early debates before Bloomberg even announced he was running. And Biden, when he had his chance to answer questions, he would sometimes end, 20 seconds short, or if they buzzed him, he would, unlike the other candidates, say, okay, my time's up, and immediately stop saying whatever he was saying. But last night, when the moderators seemed to lose control and everyone was talking over everyone and going long on questions, Biden kind of, it seems, took that opportunity to say, what are we doing here? No one is kind of abiding by the rules, and he kind of fought back last night.
And then that's, maybe that's him going back to his natural role as the sort of the dean up there, as the guy that has been around a while and is the former vice president of the United States. There's a certain, when you're in that role, right, that you're the guy that everyone kind of assumed was going to be the odds-on nominee early on. We're not so sure about that anymore. But there is a sort of grandeur or presence that candidate should have. And maybe for the first time, we really saw that. Whereas before, Joe Biden always looked like the guy kind of lost in the wilderness, not really up on the issues, vulnerable to attacks. Kamala Harris, who has since left, we remember that in the second debate. Now, at that time when everything is just kind of in chaos, then he resumes that role where he should have been all along.
All right, let's talk about the intra-party split, and then we can talk about the comparisons of what might be Sanders versus Trump in a general. So let's look at the intra-party situation. Bernie Sanders, that represents the left, the social socialist wing of the party, is leading, does that mean that you couldn't have a coalition of the moderate Democrats and best him, or is he, see what I'm saying? It's like, yes, as it's individual candidates, Sanders is leading, but if you had a Buttigieg and Klobuchar, you know, kind of thing, get together, could that be more, you know what I'm saying? Are there more moderate shares in the Democrats than there are Bernie Sanders shares?
Maybe, you know, I got to be honest with you, the enthusiasm and the energy is on that far left flank. As it is the nature of politics, you know, the it is the extremes, the more passionate extremes that tend to lead the way. And
yeah, it's tough to be passionate about being moderate. I mean,
yeah, and that's a problem in a primary setting. Now, they always say you run to the extremes of a primary, and then you try to moderate in a general. I don't know how much moderation you can go from Marxism to, you know, whatever you want to say about the United States of America and our economic system. But that being said, how could these guys line up and make a more moderate coalition? I think they could try. I just don't think there's any enthusiasm there.
Well, it might not be enthusiasm, but there are there shares. You know what I'm saying? Shares of the votership there. If people go, okay, if I'm looking at it, trying to put myself in a Democrat's shoes here and say, we do not want to lose this election. All right. We are the people that are not behind Sanders or Warren. We're going to have to figure out, it's going to be Buttigieg, it's going to be Klobuchar, it's going to be one of these, Biden. We got to pick out one horse, and we all got to get behind that horse and to be able to beat Sanders.
Is there any reason to think that they will, though?
I don't know. I don't know if people's minds work at that level like that, that kind of strategy where you go, my gosh, if we're split up, if it's individual, Sanders is winning. If it's candidate versus candidate versus candidate, but if three of them could kind of coalesce that moderate and pick one candidate, could that person beat Sanders going into, you know?
I don't know that I don't even know that they can. Here's the problem, Sean. We haven't had a real contentious Democratic primary since Hillary Clinton versus Barack Obama in 2008. That's 12 right. years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously 2012, Barack Obama runs, you know, as the incumbent. You don't have that. And then with 2016, it was that weird circumstance where we got to pave the way for Hillary Clinton. But when you have these contentious presidential primaries, you have the fight of the ideology. You have the far left versus the moderate. And things kind of go in this natural progression. Because they were rigging the system or they were, you know, the incumbent was in place, you never had that opportunity to really put, you know, the ideologies to the test at the ballot box. We're getting that now, and maybe we're going to find more truths about the Democratic Party, at least Democratic voters, I should say, than we had realized, because they, you know, they never had an opportunity to really voice their, you know, where they see the country ought to be.
What are the odds that Bernie Sanders has this nomination locked up after Super Tuesday?
I mean, it's not, I would say locked up. There's always the threat of a brokered convention and the Democrats trying to pull some hijinks. But having a delegate count and being kind of cruising toward a delegate count where he would have it locked up, per se, I think is pretty decent.
When you say, can you give like the Cliff Notes version of a brokered convention, what does that mean?
So, on the Democratic Party, they used to have in play superdelegates in the first go-around.
Mm-hmm.
What has happened? The superdelegates were always kind of a fear of the of Democrat voters, that you would have the party elites take over and determine who the nominee was going to be. You don't get that on the first go-around. But as we know, you know, these conventions, if you do have a broker convention, mm-hmm. you can have a first ballot, a second ballot, a third ballot, and so forth. After the first ballot, then the so-called superdelegates get to start coming into play. And then that's, you know, if you have a bunch of different candidates heading into the Democrat convention in Milwaukee, they're still, you know, going to show up there and contest for the floor for the nomination. It'll go to the first ballot. Then when we get to the second ballot, you know, it may not necessarily reflect the voters, you know, the will of the voters. It may reflect something else. It may reflect the will of the superdelegates, because then they get to come into play in a second round. So, you know, you show up to Milwaukee, you're assigned you're a delegate for a certain candidate. If that candidate loses and it goes to the next ballot, you go to your second choice. Your second choice then is when you'll have these kind of party elders get to start participating.
All right, coming right back, more with Jeff Poor, talk a little bit more about national politics. Well, we'll talk about state politics as it is relevant to national politics. AL1 Senate race, also races like AL2 and the state 2. He's watching on the Republican and Democrat side. We'll talk more about that when we return on this Ash Wednesday edition of Mobile Mornings. FM Talk 106.5 and the Ash Wednesday edition of Mobile Mornings. Sean Sullivan and Dalton Orwig, our buddy Jeff Poor from WVNN's Jeff Poor Show. And, of course, read his work in Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News. And we're looking at one of the stories. I want to talk about this that you have up today over at yellowhammernews.com, and a review here of kind of the situation as it stands in the AL1 race. Can you walk us through where we are with AL1 with less than a week to go?
I mean, I think the smart money is a Bill Hightower, Jerry Carl runoff. That seems to be the with an outside shot for State Representative Chris Pringle. I think is obviously, you know, it's hard to know. The one thing I would say that makes this a little more unpredictable is I don't know what the turnout is going to be. And it goes for the Senate race, AL2 as well. And I think if you have a low turnout, then it allows kind of the guy looking from the outside, the Bradley Byrne or be it Chris Pringle in AL1, it gives him a puncher's chance of getting in that runoff, because these guys have votes in different places where, you know, the assumed front runners don't. And, you know, if it could be as simple as, say, Robertsdale having high turnout or Northern Baldwin County having high turnout, and Mobile, you know, maybe not as high, and you'll lose more votes in the big cities if the turn. I mean, you know, it just seems you could have a situation where the metros turn out or don't turn out. I mean, I should say, and the rule turns out a little higher.
Does that happen? Do you see within, because generally when we think about turnout for an election, we're talking about just as a state, as a region, you know, we're always complaining, well, it was anemic or decent turnout, but I never thought about breaking it up to these districts did, you know, these areas did turn out, these didn't. I always kind of feel like it's evenly applied, but that, I guess that's not true.
No, not at all. And, you know, you look at the state traditionally, turnout is okay. I'd say the Birmingham market, it's always pretty low down in the Wiregrass around Dothan. You can't really count on those voters. Here lately, it's been pretty decent. North Alabama, Mobile, Baldwin County, you know, sometimes they feel like they're left out. You know, I'm not telling you anything new here. And you feel like you're left out sort of the statewide political scene, or maybe it's just not getting as much media exposure. And that affects turnout. So it does vary by region, and there are factors you could attribute to as to why.
Yeah, because this is good. I mean, maybe it'll help people have this thought, like when we hear I come out and say, the turnout was only 22%, or I'm just making up a number on an election, that means that it's not 22% everywhere. There were some districts that probably had a lot better turnout and some that no one showed up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you're never going to have a big turnout for a contentious Republican race in the Black Belt, right?
Right.
You know, just some places are just Democrat, and also with a presidential primary underway and that dominating the news, then maybe a lot of people go cast the Democrat ballot, right? They think that the presidential race is more important than this U.S. Senate race. There's all of those sort of factors that come into play, and it's hard to get in the minds of the voter. But I will say this: you can look at the polling, and you see the high number of undecideds in a lot of these races. This is what that tells us. People just aren't up to date on this, and there's not that much enthusiasm. You don't have just kind of a bunch of people that are likely voters that are like, you know, that I think makes them not as likely to show up to go vote.
Yeah, we've seen numbers, 32% in one of these polls undecided, I think it was for the AL1 Republican primary. That's pretty big with 5 days left.
Yeah, that's really big. But if I think when you have a big number like that, I think chances are you're going to have a very weak turnout. That just seems, you know, a weak turnout just seems like what we're headed to.
Okay, and you think that could be what you were saying, that could be the benefit of on the Senate side, Bradley Byrne, on the AL1 side, it could benefit Chris Pringle.
Yeah, so you have, with those two candidates in particular, they do have some infrastructure. They do have some campaign infrastructure. They have laid down some tracks. They have gone to things. That's when the ground level politics really is important. And not to say the other candidates have it, but we're talking very smaller. The margins are going to be a lot smaller. Percentage-wise, they may be exactly the same, but you get as many votes out. It becomes a get-out-the-vote game, and it becomes less about who had the most ads, who's been on TV the most. Those sort of factors go away, and it becomes a more of a ground-level game. And that ground-level game, you could compete, I think, a lot more from a third place, or at least those two from that third place perch.
You know, Dalton and I talked to Jeff Sessions on Monday morning on the show, and specifically his punches were aimed at Tuberville, not at Bradley Byrne. It was... He was, you know, talking about himself, why to vote for himself, but every two or three minutes, he'd take a point to reset his opponent as Tuberville.
Yeah, well, that is what I've heard, that in the runoff, should Jeff Sessions make the runoff, and this is a weird, Senate race is really weird right now, should he make the runoff, then he's going to need Bradley Byrne's voters, right? That's assumed. Uh-huh. The problem, I'll say this real quick. I know we're running short on time here. Jeff Sessions has been up on air. Jeff Sessions is doing all the right things as a candidate. Jeff Sessions was in the 40s when he first got in. He has since drifted to the 30s. Why is he trending in the wrong direction? That's a problem for the Sessions campaign. I can't put my finger on it. I think right now, and you know, I've heard this at the State House. I've heard this from a lot of different people. Tommy Tuberville is the leader. That seems to be the case.
Well, we've seen that one poll.
It's not just that one poll. It's other polls that aren't public. A lot of these trade organizations, a lot of these lobbyists are commissioning their own polls to get a feel for the race. I think Tommy Tuberville is their leader. I talked to some of the campaigns. They assume that Tuberville is leading the race. That is why Jeff Sessions has gone negative in recent weeks. Jeff Sessions, I don't think, is in danger necessarily right yet of not making the primary, but he is going in the wrong direction for whatever reason.
All right, so it is it doesn't change. Is there any of this come out that's saying that Tuberville wins it outright, or no?
There is a 20% chance, I would say, of a Tuberville versus Bradley Byrne runoff right now.
Okay. Wow. And 80% for it being Tuberville Sessions.
Sessions. It's just that Tuberville and Sessions have flip-flopped. Now, when we get to that runoff, if Bradley Byrne voters go to Jeff Sessions, and that would seem like the natural way, and then maybe things change.
And just 1 minute left here, Jeff, but if we do get a Sessions-Tuberville runoff, is there a chance that the president jumps in at that point, or will he wait until we have our Republican nominee down here?
That's hard to say. Now, I've heard Rick Dearborn, who used to work for Jeff Sessions, got the story about Tuberville and the veterans in front of Tuberville. I mean, in front of Trump, mm-hmm. and that soured Trump on Tuberville. You know, and he's not going to come out and support Jeff Sessions. I think it's very tough. I know the Bradley Byrne guys have been talking, really trying to warm up to Trump, but I don't know that Trump gets involved. It's hard to say. If he hasn't at this point, then those chances diminish by the moment.
There he is, Jeff Ford. Remind folks who want to read what you're writing or get clips from your radio show, where do they go?
It's twitter.com/Jeff_Poor.
Good stuff. Thank you, man.
Thanks for having me on.
Coming right back, we'll check in with the news, Dr. Bill's forecast, and then talking to you at 343-0106.
Hey, 836 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Right now it's time to talk with Mitch McConnell from McConnell Automotive. Hey, Mitch.
Good morning, Dalton. How are you guys doing?
Hey, we are doing great on this Ash Wednesday. And I know a lot of people out there behind the barricades these last few weeks saw some awesome-looking trucks pulling the floats. And those trucks could be yours. Tell people how they can get a Mardi Gras truck from McConnell.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Don, we're really proud to be supporting the Mardi Gras Association here in Mobile again. And if people saw those Mardi Gras parades, they saw the beautiful trucks, Dalton, and really compared to any dealer anywhere around, we've got savings that they can't get anywhere else. So if they go to our website, you'll see, I mean, X31s, the AT4s, everything. And Dalton, I mean, I'm talking about $12,000, $13,000 off some of these trucks. And, you know, a couple thousand dollars better than any other dealer around because nobody else has these Mardi Gras trucks besides McConnell.
And also on that website, McConnellAutomotive.com, you got more than trucks. Tell us what else is hot.
Well, you know, the SUVs, man, and I tell you, the great deals that we've got right now on the GMC Acadias and the Yukons, and it's just exciting because we see some discounts that we don't typically see in February, Dalton. It's kind of those are the Christmas discounts. We've got them right now, and people can shop seven different SUVs at McConnellAutomotive.com and just get treated the way people want to, which is with a ton of respect.
All right. We appreciate it, Mitch.
All right, buddy. Take care, Dalton.
All right, that's Mitch McConnell. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65.
Right, 838, and our phone number, 343-0106. A story that we mentioned earlier, also one of the three big things, top news stories of the day that you can always find on the front page of FMTalk1065.com. Alabama bill seeks to create statewide pistol permit database. And it's, here's what they say, from WIAT-TV up in Huntsville. Said, over the course of 13 months, Alabama lost seven law enforcement officers in line of duty. Now several lawmakers are supporting a bill to help protect law enforcement lives by creating a statewide pistol permit database. The Alabama Sheriff's Association is throwing its support behind the bill to create the Alabama Responding Officer Warning System. It's always arrows. Honest to goodness, y'all, if they spent, I'm not saying they didn't spend the time on this bill, but if you look in Washington, you look in Montgomery, actually, I talked to a Senate aide one time in confidence, so I can't give the name. I said, seems to me y'all spent a lot of time coming up with the acronym. When you come up with a bill, you want it to be a cutesy acronym. And he said, Sean, I've heard you saying it on the air over the years. He said, you're right. that they would be given the task as staffers to figure out which words to use so they could create. I said, my gosh, this seems like a waste of time. Just make the bill say what it is, and yeah, we'll call it, you know, bill number 114 or something. But he actually admitted, he said, yeah, man, we actually did get told to come up with the words to make it a good acronym.
You know, I grew up working at McDonald's, and McDonald's, it seemed, came up with an acronym for every single, you know, thing that they did at McDonald's. And I didn't think there was any other organization that could make more acronyms.
Federal and state government. Yeah.
The government, it's like they start with the acronym. It's like, what do we want to call this? Okay, now what do we want the acronym to stand for?
Right, or do you think somebody walks in and says, I got a really cool acronym. Now let's find some legislation to put behind it. But so this ARROWS is the acronym on this bill. And it's okay, there's the Sheriff's Association's behind it. Bill sponsor is one of our local reps, Shane Stringer, of course, with a long history in law enforcement. He calls the system a huge step towards saving law enforcement. Stringer said in this quote here, we lost seven officers last year. We're trying to better and learn from that and trying to work to better protect our officers. And so when we talked about this earlier on the text line, a lot of people reacted to this and asked the question, if they're making a database of people with conceal and carry permits, then they must be guilty of shooting these law enforcement officers. And I think it was Fred on the text line said he went and looked at it, and in not one case was it somebody with a concealed carry permit that shot the officer. So I think that's a fair question to ask. What is the value of this? How does this protect law enforcement? I think people can ask this. Show me how this protects law enforcement. And I got a response here. Representative Shane Stringer joins us at 12:15 today on Midday Mobile. We'll talk to him about this bill, get him to explain why he thinks this protects officers, why this legislation needs to move through. So those of you on the text line that were concerned with this, make sure 12:15 today on Midday Mobile to be tuned in. Text in some questions. We'll get them asked. All right. Going to the phones at 343-0106. And Larry is in Mobile, wants to talk Tuberville. Hey, Larry.
Hey, John. I know y'all were talking about stations and burns a little while ago.
Yeah.
I've heard or seen nothing of what Tupperville is actually running on other than he was a coach at Auburn.
He's not a politician. That's what I take away. So that's yeah, the policy-wise, he supports He said, "We supports everything President Trump does." Well, so do all the rest of the people in the primary. Right. I hadn't heard one say, "No, I disagree with Trump." So,
yeah. Well, that's what I was, because I hadn't seen anything for him, no commercials, no nothing other than he's running. And it, I actually seen my first signs in Mobile about 2 weeks ago that on the side of the road that actually said that he was running. So, I was just curious what his stand was on, because I knew that he hadn't done any politicking at all.
Well, he's done politicking in the form of going around the state, and he's got this Coach versus the Swamp or something bus tour that's going on. I know that they had a vehicle and signage there on Joe Kane Day. I noticed it right across from where like Moe's Barbecue is downtown, and I was busy, didn't have a chance to go over there and see what they had going on. But you know, he got this tour. He has spent time. Now I'll say this, Larry, as much as I agree with you in critique, he has spent time doing the meet and greets in all the counties and going to the Alpha events and those things. So he is getting out and shaking hands. But I'm with you as well, though. I don't know where the policy difference really is between any of them running on the Republican side for Senate.
Yeah, that's anybody that's running right now is running for dog catcher. They're 100% behind Trump. So.
True. Appreciate the call. And it cracks me up. Larry is so right. There's like positions. I'll just say this. I'll leave it at there's positions that have nothing to do mm-hmm. with what goes on in Washington and all that. They're like, and I stand with President Trump. And like that's great and everything, but it really doesn't affect the officer. But I tell you what, it's probably a successful strategy.
And what were we talking about? Delegates, don't they get?
Yes.
And you don't want your delegate. I mean, you know that if you're elected to that position, you're going to go up there and vote the way of the people. So there's no need to say, you know, I support President Trump 100%. It's like, we know. We're putting you in there to do this or that.
But move on.
Let's talk about
the other. I mean, I'm kind of interested in who's going to be better at doing. Okay, if everybody supports the policies of President Trump, which they do, and I've asked the same question of people in AL1 in the Republican primary and people running for Senate that have been on the show. Now show me how you're better at doing that than somebody else.
Yeah. With Tuberville specifically, you know, he's got no public record of votes or anything for Byrne or Sessions to get after him on. And on the opposite side, he can look at these two candidates who have held positions mm-hmm. and in Byrne's case, who's holding a position in Congress right now, and he can say, look, they did this or that, and I wouldn't agree. You know, he's got hindsight is 20/20, and sure. He has all the hindsight you could need. But the way that they would traditionally be able to attack Tuberville is say, look, he's done nothing. He's never held office. We don't know if he can even do this job. But I think with President Trump winning in the 2016 election, that really kind of cheapens that argument that an outsider can't come in and do something.
Well, but the problem is that's a benefit for a lot of voters. People say the fact that somebody's not been in office is like a very important plank on a platform, and it's a tough one. If it's important that they haven't been there, then the less experience the better, I guess, in that. It's a tough thing. We talk about the power of the incumbency. Okay, you're the incumbent. You do have an advantage over those running against you, right? I mean, it's just the way it is. You have that power because of name, ID, and branding, except in the case of Doug Jones, it's a little different thing. But in a situation where you had an incumbent, which we don't have in AL1, and we really don't have in the Senate race because of Doug Jones, but you also have the risk as being an incumbent, like you said, because you've taken votes, you've done things, and those that want to, you know, unseat you are using what you've done. Your incumbency, mm-hmm. which used to be the ultimate advantage, is now almost a weapon that's turned against you.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting way to look at this. We'll talk more about this when we come back. Phone line is 343-0106. 343-0106. We'll be right back. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. This segment of the show brought to you by The Maids, referred for a reason. And how about this? I'll refer them for many, many reasons. But the most important is getting that clean house and that time back in your schedule. Think about how much time you spend each day or each week cleaning up around the house, sweeping and mopping and wiping things down, dusting, doing all that. Well, how about vacuuming? How about handing that over and having that time back in your schedule and having that clean house? You come in, the house is beautiful, looks great, smells great, and you've got that time back in your schedule for more work or more family time or your hobbies. Give yourself the gift of clean and the gift of time with The Maids. And get a free estimate right now by calling 344-6626. Now, these are the people we use at our home, and I can tell you they are fantastic. See what I'm talking about. 344-6626. Call, get that free estimate right now. 344-6626 for The Maids. Give yourself that gift of clean and the gift of time. All right, I wanted to kind of hit a couple other subjects here, but a reminder, coming up on Midday Mobile today in the noon hour, Shane Stringer is going to join us. He is the sponsor of this bill to have this statewide database of concealed carry permits. Okay, right now it's county by county, right? The sheriffs issue those, but this would link them together. But I think on the text line, y'all asked very fair questions here. Were those law enforcement, the seven that were killed in a year's time here, were those seven killed by people with concealed carry permits? And Fred, who did some research on the text line, sent me a link here, said no. So it begs the question, is this something that needs to be done? Is this because I think a lot of people will say, okay, if there's something that can help keep law enforcement safe, I'm for it. But have they made the case that this would? And that's what we're going to ask Representative Stringer about coming up at about 12:15 today on Midday Mobile.
And in an article from WSFA about this bill, they said that it'll provide officers, quote, a clear picture of the persons they are dealing with. And that's from the Sheriff's Association, who backs this bill, talking with mm-hmm. WSFA. And they also say it standardizes all concealed carry pistol permits across the state so officers can better spot fake permits, which makes sense that if you have something to look them up and see that they don't have a permit, but they hand you one when you get to their car, that it's probably fake. But that's what I'm wondering. How many of these officer shootings even have the fake permit, or is it just people running around with...
Because so many times we talk about it's stolen guns that are used against law enforcement. I don't know. I do want to find this out. It's not a rhetorical. We're going to try to find this out when we talk to Shane Stringer today.
And speaking of our fallen officers, I saw pictures from yesterday's parade, and it looks like the families of the fallen had another loaded down float, bunch of throws for them, and they were rolling on the USS Alabama float, right?
Yep,
and
right there at the end of the KOR.
And it looks like they had a full float there with, of course, the families of our fallen officers on the float, and that looks like it turned out really well. So thank you to everyone who helped by donating to the families of the fallen float.
Another year. Y'all are amazing. Amazing folks out there. Really do appreciate it. All right, to the phones, and let's go to Derek in Fairhope. Hey, Derek.
Hey, man. It's of course we want to keep the officers safe, but it seems like it might open up, Pandora's box, because if they know that you're armed, or that you have the permit, that with them being more cautious, accidents could happen. You know what I mean? Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying I see what you're saying. I think if I've one time presented my license, I also presented my concealed carry permit at the same time, but I hadn't been pulled over in like 10 years or something like that
like 15 years. But it seems like if you're walking up and this person has a permit and there's possibly a gun in the car, well then, my first instinct as a cop is that my pistol will be at the ready, and now as a cop they have a gun, so any sudden movements, it might be a reactionary kind of thing. Not saying it's going to happen, but not saying it wouldn't happen either. Accidents happen. That's what scares me, because all the bad guys don't have permits. We know that. They're not going to follow the law.
Right.
So that was it. It's just
I appreciate your call. I mean, this is something that I'm going to hopefully have. I mean, this is why we're going to have Representative Stringer on to make the case. Maybe there's information you don't get in a TV news story or a quick blurb that lets you know. More about that. So that's why we're going to ask the questions today, and then we can make our own decisions going forward. Tim is in Robertsdale, and up next, hey Tim.
Hey, good morning. Just caught the tail end of your story here. Just curious, if you ever owned a pistol permit and it has expired, would that record be also updated, or how far back do they go, you know, knowing that you've actually had one, whether you still keep it or not?
Okay, well, that's...
throw that out there, too.
Well, that, I'm going to ask that question. Yeah, these are, this is good. Y'all are...
Okay.
Because I don't... Yeah, and Tim, I appreciate it. I'll ask that question as well. I don't... Because I don't know. I don't know, and that's why we're going to... ask those questions. I mean, if there's, I think most Alabamians, you say, hey, here's something that helps protect law enforcement, most Alabamians are going to say, okay, but show us how.
Right.
And we'll do that coming up in just about 3 hours and 15 minutes. All right. Quick reminder, too, top news stories of the day, that story amongst them, three big things. Top news stories today, always on the front page of FMTalk1065.com, where while you're there, you can check out podcasts of the 40-plus hours a week of live local radio that we do around here. A lot of that interviews with people that want your vote coming up on Tuesday. I will still have interviews between now and Monday coming up on the show, fresh interviews, but you can go back and listen to past interviews with folks that want your vote in AL1 or folks that want your vote in the Senate race. You can go and listen to what they say and help make up. Because one of those polls said on AL1, on the Republican side, AL1, Republican primary, 32% undecided. We are less than a week away from the primary.
It seems like a really high number.
It does to me. So if you want to kind of make your decision, listen to these interviews, and be ready for Super Tuesday coming up next week, which, by the way, too, we will be covering from 7 o'clock on here at FM Talk 106.5. So 7 o'clock in the evening, we'll be doing a live show here during election night. All right, Mike Gallagher Show on the way next. We'll see y'all at noon for Midday Mobile. Have a great one.